America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Everyone, we are back inside boxing live in your life, presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri coming off of Anthony Joshua's destruction of a flippity floppity Jake Paul. Six rounds, and it was all over. I was in Miami. I'm back. I'm exhausted. Doesn't matter. The show must go on. Chris was on vacation. We didn't do a show for a full week. I got anxiety from that. I have anxiety from being back in the real world. They dropped me back on Long Island. They just poof, dropped me in, Chris. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling way better than you, I'm sure. I am recharged. I'm tan. I feel nice. I've been sleeping good. You, on the other hand, you look exactly like you probably feel.
I'm going to be honest here. I'm going to be transparent on this episode. I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling very tired. I'm very exhausted.
But the show must go on.
Like, the show must go on.
A lot to talk about.
Yeah, there is a lot to talk about, but you know what? Like, it was one of the crazier fight weeks being working with the promotion. Got in there on Sunday, so it was just one thing after the next. And, you know, it was just a stimulation, overload. And I'm up there in age, guys. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And
I mean, your nickname is Old Man Dan, so
right.
Everyone knows that.
I was feeling really good all week long. I was getting my like 6 or 7 hours of sleep, which on the road is like unheard of.
Very good.
And right. And we got to fight night. I was feeling good. Did the live watch party with some friends and the fight ends. And we go to get a table at LIV because we had a long week. MVP hooked it up. MVP hooked it up. And then Joshua shows up, table next to us, and that turns into 4 or 5 in the morning. Then we have this ridiculous penthouse that MVP set up with the fight house. Of course, we're going to go to the penthouse. I mean,
penthouse. I'm going to age ourselves and say this is the Road Rules Real World Challenge house, the reality TV show house.
Behind the curtain was not a house. It was a massive, massive suite at the top of the Fountain Blue. Even Jake shat on it.
Yeah, I said, saw Jake, a video that Jake owned. That's not a house.
I was like, bro, you come into the house? He goes, that's a condo. I was like, bro, what condos are you shopping for? That's the biggest condo in the history of the world then, because that thing was massive. It was a huge, huge suite. And it was a pretty epic trip, all things considered. I had a little different of a vantage point than everyone else. You know, when you're really in close, you have a different perspective. I know I went on Twitter afterwards and no one was happy with how that fight played out. Yeah, but in terms of just being in Florida for 9 days, you have a very crazy state. You live in a really crazy state.
Yeah. And the people that end up in Florida, and because most people that you meet here are not from Florida, it takes a certain breed, a certain kind of person to want to come here and then actually come here and stay here. Because, like you said, it's this crazy place.
It's a wild, wild place. But let's get into the fight. 6 rounds. It was interesting, to say the least. It looked like, from my vantage point, in the first couple seconds of the fight, Joshua, like the pressure that he put on Jake, just his physical pressure and just the moment. And then we saw what Jake's game plan was going to be, was just to move a huge ring. And I think that first round where he just pretty much ran side to side the entire round, the enormity of the moment, the nerves, the physical of moving, I bet you he felt like after that first round, he just fought 30 rounds, because that's what it looked like from my vantage point.
Yes. And listen, I didn't expect him to do that. I didn't expect him to go out there and just fight right away. But, you know, when you in hindsight, it's 2020, right? It's like, yeah, of course he's going to do that. He's just going to get away, because you can't box with the man. But I agree. To your point, and my esteemed colleague Paulie Malignaggi brought this up. Like, well, he's gonna move. I'm like, yeah, but he's not that good of a mover. So he's going to get absolutely exhausted trying to move after a couple rounds. That's exactly what happened. By round four, you could just see the panic in Jake's face. He was just, his eyes were as big as dinner plates, and he
was
so
walkout.
He was so tired though. But I mean, when you get there's that certain level of exhaustion where it sets in on somebody, you could see it on their face. Like he looked, like you said, like he had gone 30 rounds already. He looked drawn, like his face looked sucked in the fourth round. He was so overworked. His heart rate must have been 200 the entire time.
Bro, it was nuts. It was crazy to see that. Like, where do you stand on this whole debate that's going on right now? Like, are we giving Jake Paul credit for stepping in the ring with Anthony Joshua and lasting six rounds?
I'm giving him credit for stepping in the ring with him and actually it's being a real fight. I'm not giving credit for his performance. His performance was god-awful. And people are like, oh, he made it to six rounds. Like, yeah, but if he stood and fought, he would have went 90 seconds. Honestly, if Joshua looked terrible, I'm not gonna say he'd look good either. He just loaded up on shots early on. He was so inactive early on. As soon as he started jabbing and not trying to knock Jake's head off at every punch, the fight was essentially over. And that was basically in round four, and he started dropping him at will after that. And he started going. All he had to do was throw the jab, and not throw it hard, and go to the body, and the fight was over. Which, if they had done that first round, it would have been over in round two, like everyone has predicted. So I'm not giving him credit because this was essentially, I think, the worst outcome for Jake because he showed how much of a novice he is in terms of his abilities. He hit Joshua with his best shot and Joshua didn't even blink. And he fell to the ground and looked very embarrassing. And then on top of that, he's going to get knocked out. We knew he was going to get knocked out. Breaks his jaw. So in two places, I think this is the worst outcome possible. I think if he would have gone out there and got KO'd in two rounds and stood his ground and fought, I think a lot more boxing people would be like, you know what? Kid's the real deal. He's got big balls. But the way he chose to fight is not going to endear him to boxing fans.
Yeah, that part was a little confusing to me because everyone, the big question all week long and in the month leading up to this fight, we got to remember it was only a month that this fight was announced. True. It's insane. We'll get into that in a second in terms of like the weights of Jake and everything. But everyone was wondering how would this fight play out? What's it going to look like? Everyone had their own thought on what they thought it was going to look like. And in my mind, I thought it was going to look a little bit like how we saw with Jake moving a lot. But I also thought there were going to be times where he was going to stand and rumble because you know what? This is what I have to do. This is the fight that I chose. Mm-hmm. This is the fight that I made. I have to at least try to win. So that part shocked me, like the amount of moving and the zero intention on trying to win rounds. It was trying to survive rounds. And when he did set his feet and throw, he did land. But yeah, like you said, they weren't moving Joshua. As for Joshua, I did not think he looked good at all. I mean, he looked like a guy that was 36 years old, coming off of a 15-month layoff, surgery on his elbow. Where was his jab? I was saying it on the watch party I was hosting. I was like, he's not jabbing. Like he's literally just like winging shots that were just narrowly missing. But I did a video with him earlier in the week. He's got the highest jab rate in all of boxing. Like he throws his jab 60% of the time. And when he throws it, it lands like 47% of the time. It's one of the best jabs in all of boxing. He just didn't do that. So I think that was like a game plan from his part. I thought Jake should have just went in and met him in the middle of the ring early on. Like you said, like if you get blasted out in one round, at least you went down swinging. If you go down in two rounds, at least you can catch Joshua. The look of him moving around the ring and ultimately in the end getting blasted out. So you ran all that the whole time and then you got your jaw broke. So I don't know how the boxing world is perceiving. I give him a lot of credit. He's got balls, man, to get into that ring and do that in front of the world because we know that the world was watching. Definitely has a lot of credit, but I'm just very, very curious or as to why that was the game plan that they implemented.
Well, I mean, Dan, when you say you use the word intention, and there was a zero point in that fight where he looked like he was trying to win. Doesn't right. that? I mean, as a fan that is tuning in for something, to sit there and go, I'm going to watch you not even try to win a fight, and then so what? So you could brag that you went the distance? Like that's. That's not competition. That wasn't competitive. That wasn't a competition.
It was entertainment. It was not competitive. It wasn't competitive. It was entertainment. I mean, that's what these fights are now. That's what Netflix, Netflix WWE. Fights, Netflix fights have turned into, it's a spectacle. It's an event. Yeah. It's entertainment. And this was different than Tyson and Paul because Joshua is an active heavyweight or somewhat active heavyweight. Yeah, I was very, very, very surprised by that. I thought that if you're going to take on Anthony Joshua, there would be some moments where you would get into the center of the ring. And I thought that Joshua didn't look that great. So Jake should have took advantage of it.
Joshua's not a very good inside fighter either. And Jake chose not to fight on the inside at all. He just moved and then threw haymakers where at times both his feet were off the ground throwing these shots. Another reason why he wasn't able to hurt Joshua with anything that he hit him with was the technique wasn't there either. Jake Paul fought like he was fighting his older brother when you're 11 years old and you put on boxing gloves with your 16-year-old brother and you're mean mugging him, you're sticking your tongue out, but he's beating the shit out of you and you're just dive in with shots, and that's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah. It was crazy. The whole week was a whirlwind. Joshua all week couldn't have been any cooler in terms of just walking in a room and owning it. The American media hasn't got a big view of Joshua. He hasn't been here since 2019, and unless you went overseas or to Saudi, you didn't really have a lot of access to Joshua. This fight, there wasn't a ton of media, but you had a lot of access to Anthony Joshua. The U.S. market got to see him again. The U.S. fans got to see him again. I think he came out of this, besides how he looked in the ring, he got the win. He did what everyone wanted to see. Everyone wanted to see Jake Paul get cracked, gets his jaw broken, goes down, and the fight is over. But in terms of Joshua's stock as a business, as a fighter going forward, sky high, because the guy couldn't have been any cooler all week. I mean, I saw him at Liv. He's giving selfies, shaking hands. I saw him the next day in the lobby. He's saying what up to everyone. He was just the man in Miami, and it makes me wonder if he wished that he would have fought here more often.
It certainly seems that way, even from the what I've seen. I didn't see him as close as you did, obviously. I've always liked Anthony Joshua.
And he's the best.
I had so many people asking me, I forgot who asked me who it was, but it was one of the, it might have been Declan Warrington, but it was one of the UK journalists, you know, that covers boxing, and he brought up a good point. He's like, American audiences see Anthony Joshua the way that Jake Paul was describing him. He's chinny, he's shot, he's robotic, he's this and that, and you know, Declan had asked me, he's like, is that how you feel about him? And I was like, no, absolutely not. I think he's a two-time unified heavyweight world champion. He's an Olympic gold medalist. I think if I was going to build a video game heavyweight champion, it would be Anthony Joshua. That's the guy I want. You know, he's athletic, he's big, he's strong, he's fast, he's got great technique. You name it, that guy's got it. And I didn't. I had a big disconnect between how American audiences viewed Anthony Joshua to what he actually is. And unfortunately for Jake, the picture that he painted of Anthony Joshua was not the guy who stepped in the ring with him. As bad as Joshua did look, and I think we were both saying we agree he did not look good, it's still Anthony Joshua. And I agree with you. I was going to say, going out of this, you know, you might think that I think he's not coming out of this looking good because I didn't think he looked good in the fight. But I think actually coming out of this fight, he's as high as he could be, because he looked bad enough that Tyson Fury will probably fight him next.
Yeah, and how's that fight going to go?
And how's that fight going to go? I don't know.
Because Fury's been out of the ring just as long as Joshua had been. And I wouldn't be shocked. I've heard some rumblings that a Joshua Fury fight could be on Netflix. You know, there's always something to come out of this. Joshua is a businessman. The guy is so tapped in. He's been like that for a while. It's almost like to his, it's like a detriment of his.
Well, he is a business. He is a business because there's so much money around him.
Right. And I think that a lot of fans thought that he put that before his boxing career. Like, this guy's so focused with his sponsors and all that. But I think he looked at this trip as like, this is a business trip. Like, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to knock out this YouTuber, I'm going to do my job, I'm going to open up all new markets, I'm going to try to get a relationship with Netflix, I'm going to try to get a relationship with some U.S. stuff. And I don't know if you saw, me and him did a video where I taught him New York slang. And no, so, really?
I've been on vacation, dude. I've been off.
Right, 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 right. Got you. Yeah, get off the grid. Like, yeah. You don't want to. Yeah. And so I go to him like, I'm gonna teach you some New York slang, and I go, first thing, get the fuck out of here, and he does it. So all week long, he sees me and he just looks at me and goes, get the fuck out to me.
That's awesome.
From the beginning of the week all the way to we're at Liv. and he's yelling it at me from across the table. And it went into the, like, when we did the video, it was more of a discussion about, like, Brooklyn. He's a student of the game. He said he watches a lot of Tyson stuff. He started telling me all the his favorite Brooklyn fighters. Then we started talking about Sopranos. It was like the strangest tangent we went on. But he's definitely a student of the game, and he definitely made his mark. For sure. Whether he fights Fury, I mean, that's logically next. I think The Ring reported...
Well, I heard that he's got another fight.
Yeah, which I don't understand that. The Ring reports earlier in the week, trying to steal, thunder from this event, is that Joshua's going to fight again in, like, February, and then Fury's going to fight again in February. Then they're going to square off in the summer in Wembley, or the fall at Wembley. Like, we really need more tune-ups for these guys? Like... No, just get it on. Like, tune-ups have hurt boxing. So why are we doing more tune-ups, Chris? Like, and I've heard some of the names I've heard for Joshua, like the Glory Kickboxing.
Yeah, Rico Van Herven. Yeah, I heard about this a month ago. So this is one of the reasons that I was like, when people are like, oh no, Joshua's going to throw, he's going to die, he's not going to take the fight seriously. I'm like no, because he's got a really, really big payday, which is also another pretty easy fight compared to the other guys that are out there in the boxing world. In Rico, no shade on Rico. Rico is an awesome fighter, but it's still, he's not a boxer. He's coming into Anthony Joshua's world in February. And I'm like, yeah, that's a big, big money fight, and is going to be another easy payday for Joshua after this fight. So he's definitely going to win this fight, because he's not going to risk future earnings. If he's really thinking about making money in his next couple fights, he's got to win this fight, and he's got to do it big, and he did.
Yeah, I thought he came in and he wasn't holding back. I think he was just getting into the rhythm, and he had not fought in 15 months.
I was trying to figure out why he wasn't jamming. I thought that was the bad elbow. Apparently, it's the right arm. It's the right elbow, because the way he was pawing with the left jab at times, and he actually pawed with both arms at times. It looked very, very strange. Like, it was like I was like, is he working out scar tissue in the elbow? This looks very weird, because he just was not pumping the jab or either hand for the first couple rounds. Like, he had to, like, I've never literally watched someone, like, knock the rust off. Like, it looked like he was literally just like,
that's what it was.
Let me just get the rust off these elbows.
Yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right, because that's what this was. Everyone heading in said, will Joshua take this fight serious? Is there some type of clause in the contract? No, you were looking at a 36-year-old heavyweight who has a ton of mileage and also is coming off of a surgery, literally working it out in the ring, because he was fighting, let's be honest, a novice. So by the fourth round, the distance was closed. He started to jab a little more. And I remember saying on the watch party I was doing with Lucas Body and Juana Walton, I was like, bro, this next two rounds, it's going to get ugly in here, because he's starting to jab more now to the body. Yeah. And I think he's warmed up and he's sweating more. This is the beginning of the end in about round four, and then splat.
Well, you know, how many times did Jake hit the canvas? I saw a couple of posts on Instagram, like on socials, about, you know, he hit the ground like 12 or 13 times. You know, I think he hit the ground more times than punches he landed.
Yeah, he landed 13 punches, and he went down 16 times, or took 16 takedown attempts, something like that.
Yeah, well, the takedown attempts were insane. Like, literally, like, shooting double leg and single leg takedowns on Joshua, who literally just stuffed him. Stuffed him down and pushed him on the floor.
Put him in the whizzer? He gave him a whizzer.
A whizzer, the overhanded whizzer, overhook. But also he was just palming his forehead at times and pushing him down. Like, it really was an older brother, little brother situation. It was not a good look. It was not entertaining. It was frustrating. That poor referee, Christopher Young, he's a great ref from down here in Florida. He works a lot of the pro box shows. I've seen him work. He's a no-nonsense guy.
He was pretty good.
By the book. He's very good. But that's a rough job dealing with what he had to deal with that night with those two guys.
He probably had a figure. They probably briefed him, like, you know, this could get ugly, or like, I don't know if anyone did. Anyone anticipate Jake flopping like that?
No,
I didn't.
No, being flopping all over the ring like that? No, I don't think anybody. No, no one did. I don't think he did either. But at one point, Christopher Young, the referee, again, we mentioned he did a good job. I think he did a great job. He stopped. He goes, guys, the roughhouse stuff. He's like, this is not what people didn't pay for this crap.
He said that.
Fight. Said that on the air.
Oh my god! Yeah, because
people did not pay for this crap.
Oh, that's amazing, because I was doing the watch party on the other side of the ring, and I didn't have sound. I didn't have, like, a really good program. And I had these celebrities behind me going crazy. Bert Kreischer sitting right behind me, dude, going berserk. Juan Soto, former Yankee, now with the Mets. I had to tell him. I didn't tell him off, because that's just rude. But I was like, hey.
You didn't want to smash your head.
was like, bro, I'm a Yankee fan, and you broke my heart going to the Mets. And he laughs. He goes, but we had fun, right? In that 1 year that he brought us to the World Series. I was like, yeah. And then he had a fifth round bet. So every round, I'd look back at Soto, and he's laughing his ass off. And then it happened in the sixth. But I was sitting also next to Portnoy. And Portnoy, who stole my job, he did the DraftKings segment up on the telecast. I had to tell him that too. I was like, bro, don't you have enough in life? Like, don't you have enough?
You're gonna take money out of my pocket now?
You can see it on the stream. It was on live on the stream. I was like, bro, you know I did this for the Tyson fight. And he starts laughing. But 2.5 rounds was the over-under. And I was telling everyone that would listen to me all week long in any interviews or shows I did, hammer the over because it's a huge ring. Joshua, I don't think it's any funny business. I just think Joshua's going to take a while to load up. And even Joshua said it in an interview. He goes, I've never been the type of fighter that knocks a guy out like the first minute of the round. He goes, I warm up a little bit. Besides Ngannou, who – that's another storyline here. Ngannou just stood there. Ngannou was a stationary target. Jake was not.
Right. And, I mean, but also, I think even watching this fight, what we can take from this about Anthony Joshua, the guy's got slow feet. Like, Ngannou had slower feet than him, so he made Joshua look like twinkle toes in terms of the way he was able to move and get across the ring and his speed. But Jake showed that Joshua's feet are pretty slow. He's not a really mobile guy. And at heavyweight, you don't really have to be, especially when you're 250 and you have a cannon for a right hand. So he generally can just hold his ground and wait for guys to come to him, or he could just get behind that jab and start pumping that thing like he did in round four and to finish the fight, and like we've seen him do so many other times. But the mobility issue is there. So Ngannou, who is bigger and slower footed than Joshua, you know, was right there to be shot with that cannon. And Jake just was not willing to be that guy. And he wasn't willing to win. He wasn't fighting him. He was trying to survive.
But in the end, he gets his jaw broken and didn't get spectacularly sparked. I'm surprised he stood up after that.
Yeah, it was pretty. I mean, the shot was, it was beautiful, but also, and this is a boxing thing. Trying to knock someone out who's not trying to engage is really hard to do. And even the shot that hit him, like he was like backed up against the ropes, whatever. If he was punching with Joshua, he would have woke up tomorrow. But he wasn't. He was literally pulled straight back waiting. Yeah. And the shot was, you know, hit him right in the chin. It was a great shot. But he was pulling away from it as well. And it still did that much damage. But if he was trying to punch with Joshua, that would have been really bad. He really would have been out.
So Joshua beats Jake Paul, and now all eyes go to this Fury fight. Do we get it next year, and how does Fury Joshua look?
I think we do get it, and I've been saying that for a while. Part of it is I'm being whimsical because I really want the fight to happen, and I think it needs to happen. I think it's the biggest UK fight definitely the biggest UK fight we can make, even though they're both past it. But they're both past it enough that it could still be a really good fight, and it makes you think, I'm not sure who's going to win that fight. Joshua... I was leaning towards Joshua because of him being out of the ring for so long, but he really didn't impress me on Saturday with Jake Paul. And I think that version of Joshua, even a Tyson coming off the couch, it's still Tyson Fury, dude. He's still just an athlete. He's just a giant athletic man, and he's got balls of steel. So I think it's a great fight, and I do think we get it. How it goes, there's really no way to tell at this point because you don't know what Tyson Fury has left in the tank. We really don't know what Joshua has left in the tank at the high level. We just watched him do a sparring session with a novice, so you really can't get much out of it. I don't know. I don't know how the fight. I don't know how the fight goes at this stage.
I don't think they need tune-ups. I wish they would just run right into it, tune-ups make it a better fight. If anything, it's got more juice now with this Joshua win over Jake Paul. Fury is Fury. Yeah, I agree. I think it's got a new life now, and they're not so washed where it would be like a bad fight. I still think it has to happen. And if Usyk's going to fight Wilder and Fury's going to fight Joshua, then we get some closure on this era. That's it. They've all fought each other. They've all circled the block.
The loop is closed.
The loop is finally closed, and we put a button on the end of a heavyweight era. So, yeah, I hope we do get it. As for Jake Paul, he says he's going back down to cruiserweight. He says he's going to take some time off. He said he's been grinding for 6 years now. I think he should just go after some of the big names now. Just go after the hit list, the KSIs, the Conor McGregors, the Tommy Furies. Just go that route, make big events. They're still spectacles. They're still fun. I do think there's still an interest in him, the way he fought. The way it all played out. I do think there are people that still want to watch his fights. But go after those types of mega events and just be that type of guy for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, be the Hulk, be the Hulkamania, be Hulkster. The way he built himself from this whole experience, that's who you are now. And listen, he's going to be out for a while. Let's put it that way. That double-sided jaw break. I know some guys that have had that happen. I listened to, there was this online maxillofacial surgeon talking about even before the reports came out of the surgery and how it went, the guy's like, yeah, with the way that break is, he's going to lose some teeth. He's going to have both sides are going to be plated. And just like that guy said, when it came out today that, you know, what had happened, I was like, oh, wow, he did lose some teeth. And Jake,
did you see his teeth were like going other way? Yeah, they were so, like, it was
that's
jagged.
What happens when you break your jaw. I was working at camp with Luke Rockhold when he fought Blachowicz, the big Polish heavyweight, and he broke Luke's jaw in the same way. And Luke didn't go right to the hospital. We went to the after party, hung out for a bit, and he just kept showing. He'd be like, yeah, man, check this out. And like, it was just this portion of his chin like this was just in a different angle than the rest of his back teeth. It's crazy.
But you got Jake Paul, who is a business in himself and like has to get that surgery right away. And he also
absolutely
shit ton of money. So
I heard $89 million, but back to what I was saying about the surgeon, and the surgeon was saying how long it's going to take him to recover, because that has to heal the plates. They have to remove the plates and then the jaw has to get strong enough so they can do the implants, because you can't drill back into a bone that's healing. So that has to heal completely. Then you have to do the implants to put the teeth back in, and the teeth have to go back in, because that's part of the strength of your mandible as well. If you don't have teeth in your jawbone, there's gaps and there's less density in your jaw. It's not going to be as strong. Then after that, you got to work on actually the masticator muscles, which is what, you know, helps you grind your, you know, bite down your mouthpiece. He's going to be out for 9 months, 9 to 12 months. He's going to have trouble talking for the next couple months. Those teeth got to go back in. So it's going to be a while.
A broken jaw like that, you just explained the recovery plus the amount of money that he's made, plus he's been fighting on a pretty continuous basis. We might not see him for a while. He's been busy. I mean, two fights a year is considered busy, but he's been consistent with it. We're getting in the elevator to go back up to the fight house at an ungodly hour, and his mom was in the elevator, and she had just got back from the hospital. She was with him in the hospital because he got surgery, and that's the very interesting aspect of it all, is that his parents, I just saw them all week at the hospital, the hotel, and so Jake's going to be out for a while. Joshua's going to move forward. Hopefully we get Joshua Fury. It was a very, very long week. It was a wild week in Miami. Fountain Blue is insane. That's such a nice hotel.
Yeah, it's sick. We got some real gems down here. Florida, I know we talk about how crazy it is, but
expensive though. Jesus
it's
Christ.
It's a very expensive. Miami's
$50,
a very expensive place.
Bro. Every breakfast was $50 in the hotel, cuz there was nowhere else to walk. We were like pretty much on an island, stuck on South Beach.
Yeah, South Beach. There was like orange juice.
$12 orange juice, $8 coffee. Coffee and a muffin, $21.
Yep. That's why people who live in Florida don't go to Miami much, because of that reason.
It's
Vegas. It's Vegas on the beach, dude. It's Vegas on the beach.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. When I first walked in the Fountain Blue, I had that smell, like that air they pump in, MGM. That makes me think of big fights. Like, I was like, I walked in. So when I first checked in on Sunday, I was like, I feel like I'm in Vegas, but it's different. It had a way different vibe. Like, Vegas, like we've talked about on the show numerous times, like, it's Vegas. Like, it's fun, but you're in the desert and there's certain aspects that just kind of suck. Like, having a huge fight in Miami with the beach there and pools and that whole vibe, it made it very cool. It felt different. The experience was amazing. I know a lot of people will think differently of it because how the fight played out or they weren't there. But just as someone that covered it all week and did all the events, and, you know, they put a ring in the middle of Liv on Tuesday night for the open workout, which was just silly. And then everything that went with it was fun.
Silly,
it was a spectacle.
But that's pretty cool.
It was so sick. They gave me a little camera, Dan Cam, and they let me run around Liv. I was going backstage. I was running through, hanging out with. I went to Jake's locker room. I kicked out of Joshua's at that point because they didn't want any more MVP people in there. Yeah, putting the ring in the middle of Liv is, you know, Netflix. When Netflix and MVP come together, they have a lot of ideas, and they have a very big budget. So,
well, they entertain. They know they understand exactly what you said at the beginning. This is entertainment, and they're very good at that. The way they structure everything, it's very impressive, man. The way they've built this company up, MVP, and in the speed at which they've done it, it's been light speed. From when I think I was looking at, they were doing some timeline during the telecast, like where both these guys were like 10 years ago, and then like the timeline of what Jake has done in terms of, he beats, KSI, or no, he beat that first guy.
Gibb.
It was Gibb. I was going to say
in
Gibb.
Miami. I was there.
Right. So he had that. I think that was like 2020.
2020. Right before COVID. It was Super Bowl week. Right before COVID shut everything down.
That's what it was. It was 2020. And then it goes 2021. He starts MVP Promotions. I'm like, that was 5 years ago. And these guys are putting on events like this. In terms of the promotional and the company, I mean, what Jake has been able to do with MVP Promotions is out of control. It's very impressive.
Right, and they had a lot of fights all week long, three on the showcase and then more fights on the broadcast. I got to hang out with Caroline Dubois, who was just delightful. She is so cool. We hung out all week. She came on the watch party. We were cracking up. Shannon Courtenay, who just signed with MVP, she was there all week. A lot of the women fighters that MVP assigned, that's what it's going to be from here on out. A huge 2026 with the women fighters. But all the fighters I talked to that are signed with MVP – speak very highly of the promotion, speak very highly of Nikisa and Jake and what they've all done. And it's even like a guy like Jamal Harvey, who was an Olympian who signed with MVP. He was the first fight of the night on Netflix. Like, if you sign with MVP, you're going to be on big, big cards. How about Anderson Silva, bro? That uppercut with the high knee?
Yep. That was Roy Jones stuff. But listen, that's
and the Roy level. And Roy was there.
Yeah, that's the level of anyway, and I'm not being hyperbolic, like that's Roy stuff, because Anderson Silva, if you don't know about MMA, like he is the Roy Jones Jr. of MMA. Like that's exactly who you would picture him as, or talk to him as, or compare him to. Absolute living legend, one of the best strikers that you've ever seen. He was a high level Thai boxer. He's a Brazilian Jiu Jitsu black belt, one of the most dominant champions in UFC history. And for him to make his transition to boxing and be a successful
50 years old.
Is so awesome. I called this fight against Chavez Jr.
Yeah.
I was there live in Mexico, in Guadalajara. And I was so impressed with him. I was so impressed with him about how he was able to fight. And even when he fought Jake, like, that was probably Jake's best win. And I actually predicted that. Right?
It's funny you say that. It's aging very well.
Yeah, it's 100% his best win. And I remember going into that fight. And I picked against Jake before, but that fight I was like, I just called his fight with Chavez Jr. He's losing that fight.
Because I think that was one of the first episodes we did when you joined the show.
That's probably about right.
Because I remember our first episode, you were like, I'm going with Silva. This is it. And I was like, damn, he's right out of the box.
This is the end of the Jake Paul train. Because, and that was not even a knock on Jake. I was bigging up Silva because I had just seen him fight. Yeah. So that was a really good win for Jake Paul, and definitely to date, that's his best win.
Silva's the man. He was so nice all week long. And,
he's the nicest dude. When we did fight in Guadalajara. He was amazing. It's unreal. Him and his team were so cool.
It was unreal. What do I want to say about that one? Oh, you know that guy Ashton Hall, the guy that dunks his face in the water? He went viral over the summer.
Yeah. He I've seen him down. I've seen him down here at fights before. Yeah.
Bro, they brought him to our booth to call that fight. And I call. He's an interesting guy, bro. He didn't know jack shit about boxing. He's like, so Anthony Joshua. He's like, he good? I'm like, yeah. And then he'd be like this. He said this at every. Oh really? Oh really? Everything I said. Oh really? Oh, so he's like, is this Jake's big, toughest, hardest fight? I'm like, yes. This is on the broadcast. I'm watching Anderson Silva knock out Tyron Woodley while calling it with Ashton Hall. And I said to myself, I'm living in a simulation. This is not real life. Like, what world are we living in? With a guy that dunks his face in the water. Hell of a nice guy, though. He had no ego at all. He was getting swarmed by everyone there.
He's not very tall. When I met, I was surprised. He was not very tall.
Jacked out of his mind. But
tall. I was surprised. I was like, I saw him at a kickboxing event, actually. Again, I'm sure he knew nothing about kickboxing. He said he didn't know anything about boxing. And he walked by. I'm like, that's the face water guy. And he walked by. I'm like, I thought he'd be bigger. But
he had me laughing, though, because part of his shtick is that he goes to bed at like 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And he got on the set and he's like, I'm happy to be here, even though it's past my bedtime. And I laughed so hard at that. He got me good there.
He said, I laughed so hard at that.
He got me there. He got me. I started to laugh. I was like, that's good, bro. That's a good shtick. Yeah. So it was, that was the night. That was the night. That was the week. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy that we're back in the swing of things. We will be doing our year-end award show next week. We're going to be putting out our voting for Fighter of the Year, Round of the Year, Story of the Year, all that stuff. It's our favorite episode. That's going to come.
Yeah, we have fun.
Next week, we're going to take a little bit of a break for Christmas. What else happened, man? Oh, yeah. Terrence Crawford retired during Jake Paul fight week and kind of stole the thunder. Do we believe that Terrence Crawford is really retired?
No. No way. I don't think so. Yeah, how do you go from 2 weeks ago broaching the idea of a Canelo rematch, then Canelo comes out and says, yeah, I want that fight, and then to be like, nah, I'm good. It's just there's way too much money on the table. And listen, I think Crawford kicks Canelo's ass again. I don't think it's a hard fight. It's an easy $100 million. Why would you not do that?
Does he want $200 million? Is this a negotiation ploy?
Negotiating ploy, yes.
It's very, very. It makes us all cynics when the news like that breaks. And I'm around a lot of boxing people. No one really blinked because we've seen this story too many times in the sport, where a fighter says they're walking away. They either come back or it's a way to negotiate. But one thing we've learned about Terrence Crawford is he moves different. He's a different type of cat. And would you be that shocked if he never fights again?
No. No. And I mean, after the Canelo fight, I was like, oh, man, I hope he packs it in. I hope that was enough money that he's good with, you know, the rest of his life and what's there. But maybe not. Maybe he's thinking there's money left on the table. I can't leave it now. I gotta make it. And he comes back. But listen, either way, because he does exist, like you said, he moves the way he wants to move. He's his own man, and I don't think it makes that much of a difference in terms of his legacy if he fights Crawford again. I don't think it affects his legacy at all, especially if he beats him again. The only thing that affects is his bank account.
It's weird because I remember a famous line of his is when he became undisputed at 140. And he said, man, this is going to be great. I can go into Cracker Barrel and everyone knows my name in Omaha. So this is not a guy that was like infatuated with being a star. It was a guy that shied away from media and was very happy and very content with the money he was making. Very good money. Because I think at his height at Top Rank, he was pulling in $4 or $5 million a fight to fight the Amir Khans, the Kell Brooks, you know, not at the top welterweights because he got frozen out by PBC famously. So I don't think money like moves him. I don't think it drives him. I think obviously legacy does, and his legacy is set. I mean, he's a five division champion, undisputed at multiple weight classes, undefeated. But he is at the top of his game, Chris. He is now the number one money guy in the sport outside of maybe like a heavyweight fight. He is now the attraction. He's the guy that everyone has to watch in the sport. Doesn't matter who he fights. So I thought that he would come back and either fight Canelo, or I thought that he would fight even a lesser name, do it at a stadium in Lincoln, in Nebraska, and just bask in the fact that you are now the man. Like, you can get 20 to 25 million to fight anybody. And as we know about fighters, as we know about anyone, is like, why would you turn down that money when you finally made it to that level in your career where you can demand things? Because this guy famously couldn't get any of those things in his career.
And now that he can, yeah, absolutely. And again, it's just going to come on to him. And he's one of those guys. You can't look in Terrence Crawford's mind. You can't predict no. What he's going to do. You can't predict what he's going to do in the ring. You cannot predict what he's going to do outside of the ring. He is an unpredictable, reactive being. And he is in the driver's seat now. He is one of those guys who garners tens of millions of dollars every time he fights. But maybe he can make a $100 million fight. He is one of those guys. So there's that next level, right? There's the guys who make the $10 million. There's a couple of those. Like, it's Errol Spence has made $10 million. Guy, a lot of Canelo opponents have made $10 million. When you get to the $100 million, that's a different level of guy. That's, you're talking about De La Hoya. You're talking about Floyd Mayweather. You're talking about Canelo Alvarez. And now we're talking about Terrence Crawford. So
yeah, exactly.
That's generational, life-changing, multi-generational life-changing.
Yeah, that's why I tend to think he's going to come back, even if it's for one more fight. And who knows if it's going to be Canelo, or who knows if it's going to be a crossover type of fight. Like, that's when we get into, like, the silly. Like, will he take Netflix money to fight Ilia Topura? Will he take Netflix money to do a crossover or type exhibition type fight, fight Jake Paul? I mean, that was on, he was on the list. Apparently, Crawford accepted the Jake Paul fight, but said he had to do it in 2026. And Netflix said, no, we have to do it this year. He was one of the names that was on that list. So he did relinquish a lot of the belts. That to me is like the one of the factors when a guy say they're going to retire and they just say that, but they hold on to the belts. I think he gave up all of them, but the IBF one. We know that he dropped the WBC one 2 weeks ago. And then he apparently is giving up some of the other ones. So that's interesting. The domino effect at 168, Shiraz, Pacheco, a lot of the names at 160. Who am I missing? They're going to try to take some of these. What, Canelo? Like, what does Canelo do now? Like, if Crawford's gone, does Canelo try to fight at 168 again against, you know, a Shiraz now for a vacant belt? That's not an easy fight for Canelo.
Canelo's in a hard place because, listen, you lose to Crawford again, you still make $180 to $100 million. You lose to Crawford again, you already lost him. Also, he's a much smaller guy. He's probably not going to hurt you. Shiraz, though, you lose to him, the new kid on the block. You're crowning a new lion, and you're probably going to get hurt by a guy like Shiraz. It's way more embarrassing for your legacy. Losing to Crawford again is not going to hurt your legacy any more than it's already been hurt. Losing to Shiraz certainly will.
Yeah, I think that's what Canelo only wants next. Is he's got two fights left, and there's a lot of money on the table for Canelo. There's Iglesias, who's ranked second on By the Ring. There's Mabili, Lester, Diego Pacheco, Caleb Plant, Shiraz, Bruno. So it's a great division. I didn't even think that Crawford was going to fight at 168 moving forward. You know, we thought he was going to go to 160. That was like the story for a while. Janibek pops. Adames is not a big fight for Crawford.
That ruined everything, man. Fuck, it really did, dude. That really fucked things up.
the domino effect of that. Like, if Janibek fights Lara and beats him, he has three of the belts. Adames has the other one. Crawford, I thought, would maybe fight Adames in like a homecoming fight and make a lot more money than he should with Turkey with him, and then he fights the Janibek for Undisputed, and that's what I thought the route was going to be for Crawford. And it's not like huge, it's not like marquee, it's not everyone stop what you're doing and watch this on Netflix, but it was still something for Crawford to make 50-60 million before he says goodbye. Then Janibek pops, and now 160 is back to being irrelevant.
50-60 million, but also legacy wise, you're putting everyone so far in the rear view at that point.
Bro,
you're so
Undisputed,
far ahead. Yeah.
Undisputed at 140, 47, 54, 68, and 60. Five-time Undisputed in five different weight classes?
He wasn't Undisputed at 54. Yeah, he's just a champion at 54.
Right.
Undisputed at 40, at 47, at 68, 60. And then 60. So four division Undisputed is out of control.
No one's done that.
No, five division world champion, six division world champion, six division, because 35, 40, 47, 54, 68, 60.
Insane.
Six division world champion, four of them undisputed. You put everyone so far behind you. Like, number two is miles from the number one. He's pound for pound the best fighter who's ever lived by miles at that point.
Even though if you can comb it back and poke holes in it, how he's gone about the Undisputed. And then the Undisputed is way different than what it is years ago. Now it's just like a political game.
We're talking about a whole show right now.
Yeah, discussion. But he is that guy. Like the air around Crawford is that he's one of the greatest to ever do it. You could drop him in any era, any generation, and he'd give those guys fits at multiple weight classes too. So I don't know. I'm leaning two different ways. I'm leaning towards he will come back and maybe in like an exhibition type of fight or a real big one. But we've seen this guy time and time again just be a different cat and just say, you know what? Like, maybe I am done. I got nothing left to prove. It's kind of like Usyk. There's nothing left for Usyk to prove, but he's still going to continue to fight because, you know, he can make money and he's 37,
I think,
38.
Usyk, he can still do it, so he will. That's ultimately why I'm not even really mulling it around. He's going to fight again because he can.
Crawford.
Yes.
It could be as simple as that. He's going to fight again because he can.
That's what I think. And I think that's why we're going to see. I'm not even going back. I'm not going back and forth with it. Like you asked me if you could see him now fighting again. Yeah, I could see it, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is he's going to fight again.
Yes, let's end the show talking about some fights that are upcoming. Ring 5 is coming to Saudi Arabia. Naoya Inoue is leaving Japan to go fight in Saudi Arabia. Very interested to see how that will play out in terms of the travel, in terms of him fighting a little bit out of his comfort zone. This isn't coming to the U.S. and dealing with a market here that puts on fights all the time. This is going to fight in Saudi at an ungodly hour in the morning. But he's fighting Alan David Picasso. It's the fourth fight of the year for Inoue. It's for his undisputed junior featherweight title. He's a huge favorite in this one. The big story here is if he wins and Nakatani wins, who was on the same card fighting Sebastian Hernandez-Reyes, we're looking at a Inoue-Nakatani epic showdown in May or June at the Tokyo Dome. I'm excited for this. December 27th. So we get a little bit of like a Christmas fight here.
I love holiday fights. I love, and usually we're watching them, you know, from Japan. They do like the New Year's Eve fight.
New Year's Eve ones. Epic.
Yeah, yeah, right. The Christmas weekend fights, which are all awesome. So yeah, I like when you, like, you're sitting around, you've got your holiday hangover, and yeah, I can put on some fights. So, and it's usually in a way lately. So like that's making it even better. And it's not a bad fight. Picasso is a guy that I've actually called before. He's tough. I don't think he stands a chance against Inoue, but who does? And the answer to that question, who does, is also on the card, Nakatani. That's the guy who stands a chance. So God willing, Nakatani goes out there and does what he does. For the record, Nakatani, or by the way, Nakatani has been sparring hundreds of rounds with Ramon Cardenas from ProBox TV.
He got a nasty knockout. Bro, you guys had an outstanding show in ProBox.
Yeah.
That I should have went to that, bro.
You should have. You should have. That
I was like 20 minutes away from you.
It was one of the best shows of the year. I mean, it was awesome top to bottom. We had a double knockdown. Ramon Cardenas had a walk-off KO. That was amazing. Knockout of the year type stuff. We had a come from behind. Well, not even come from behind. It was a first round, like crazy knockout. Anyway, but back to the Nakatani fight. So Nakatani's been training hard and working with a really good guy in Ramon. So I think he's going to go out there, do what he needs to do, and we're going to see these guys fight in the Tokyo Dome coming May.
We got to go to that, right?
We do have to go to that. Have to.
Well, it could be the same weekend as Benavidez Zerto. Did you see that Zerto is foregoing his tune-up and just going right into the May event with Benavidez? Doesn't want to mess up the bag there. Yeah, I think next year's going to be nuts. If Nakatani, who should get through this, if not, they both get knockouts. They just both have to win and not get hurt. But if they both get knockouts, Inoue and Nakatani, and they both get in the ring after, it's going to be some – the scenes are going to be insane, and it's going to be awesome. That's the end of the year. And then they should be fighting in May sometime, I think, early. I think it's Cinco de Mayo weekend. It could be Nakatani, yep. Inoue, and Benavidez Zerto.
And are we going to say that Canelo's not going to come back that day as well? Like he's just
bro,
gonna jam
Canelo is. I feel like boxing is going on, and Canelo is just like not in the party. He's on the outside looking in at the club for the first time in a long time.
Which is why he's going to be like, "All right, I need to get back in there." Like those types of guys, those guys who have been at the top for so long, they don't like Floyd. Floyd hates when other people are getting shined.
Yeah.
So Canelo wants to get back in there. I wouldn't doubt we have a Canelo return that weekend as well. That May is going to be so nuts for boxing.
Yeah, and it's for the first time in a long time. Canelo doesn't have anyone to fight. And the thing with Turkey, like, to his credit, is like Turkey demands these big fights out of these guys. Like, hey, I'm giving you 60, 70, 80 million a fight. Like, here are the names you have to choose from. Like, you have to fight someone tough. And he's got two fights left on that deal.
That's the way it should be. And I don't think Turkey wants to deal with another William Skull situation. Like he's like, oh, you got to fight real guys, dude. You can't. Yeah, exactly.
That's going to win PTSD. That's going to win an award next episode. Not a good one.
Yeah, not a good one. Not a good one at all. And that's the way it should be. If you are garnering that kind of money, if you're negotiating that kind of money, you got to fight, dude. You don't got to win, but you got to fight somebody good. Like you got to fight somebody really good. You got to earn this money. That's what it's all about, man.
All right, we got anything else here? I'm running on fumes. This cold brew is keeping me alive. I got to put together my Instagram dump. Got to curate a dump.
Yeah, that's all on you, man. I was really enjoyed my time away from the socials.
You were. Tell us about your vacation.
I needed it. I was burnt out. It's been a really crazy year. I worked like six jobs. at all times. Like
it's almost like you're like a regular civilian working.
I mean, not really, because my jobs are.
Wait, then again, really. You're on a movie set.
Yeah, no, for one, my jobs are way more interesting than normal jobs. Too, they make a lot more money than normal jobs, but it's certainly a grind. And it was just like it was taking away from my physical and mental health. So I need a little recharge. So I feel good now. I'm back to it now. Back in the gym, getting myself back in shape.
Yeah, I need to get back in the gym.
Got my birthday coming up in 2.5 months, so I usually like to get in really good shape for my birthday, so I can do my post. I'm like, this is what 42 looks like without
any
drugs.
Let's go, baby.
So yeah, gotta tighten it up. Tighten up,
bro. I got 10 days before I head to San Juan for Amanda Serrano, so I got to.
10 days is a good amount of time, though.
I was kind of thinking, I forgot I was talking to like my dad or something. I was like, oh man, I was like, the Serrano one's gonna creep up on me fast.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, you'll be on your couch, and like on the fifth day in a row on your couch doing nothing, you're gonna start itching to get on a plane and go to another fight.
What you should do is get in the gym, bro.
I'm always in the gym. Lock in your diet, lock in your sleep patterns.
I'm saying, lock in.
Really lock like, in?
Like Ashton. Go do an Ashton.
Go to bed at 5 p.m.
Go to bed at 5 p.m. Ice your face right away in the morning. Get a workout in. Eat, you know, 2 hard-boiled eggs and a can of tuna, and then get back in the gym. Do that for like a week, and you're going to be
down.
Like, I am so ready to get out back out there.
Oh, I love that plan. A girl did ask me in South Beach if, do you work out? And that hurt my ego a lot. But you didn't even. Like, I was wearing like a nice tight shirt too. I was like, damn, that hurt.
That's one of those things that women can say that can.
It shot me down a few bit. I was feeling good too. I was, you know, walking around Miami. I got all access at Live and Fountain Blue. Hanging out with Portnoy and Soto. And this hot chick goes, oh, do you work out? I was like, oh, you can't tell? Just crushed my ego. Crushed it to bits. Yeah, I'm going to do the Chris Algieri champion lifestyle. Come back to you at the end of the week, see how we feel. All right, everyone, that's our episode. We'll be back. Our next episode is the year-end award show. I cannot believe it's the end of the year. Don't forget to vote. I'm going to put out a link in the next day or two once I put together all the nominees. It's going to be a great one, Chris. We're going to be in our tuxedos next time you see us.
Yeah, I got to make sure mine's pressed. That's why I kept
looking. Got to make sure I still fit in mine.
That's another reason to lock in, bro. You got short time.
I got no time. Everyone, protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you next time.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.